Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history.
Hi everyone, Jim Rizzoli here in Framingham, Massachusetts. Today we have a special guest, Jan Lamprecht from South Africa. Right, Jan, that's where you're from?
Yes, that's where I'm currently living. I'm originally from what was called Rhodesia, which is now known as Zimbabwe.
All right. And I guess your claim to fame, as we say, you run the site called historyreviewed.com, which is an excellent site for you folks. You have to go to the site. It really is well done. I must give you credit for that. I mean, it's got a ton of stuff on it.
Thank you for
us white people to go to see. I mean, very well done. A lot of information there. And anyway, that's quite an undertaking to keep a site like that going. So, other than that, you're kind of an activist dealing with the defending of the white race, wouldn't you say?
Yes, as a general point, yes, that's pretty much what it's come to. It started out as defending the people in Southern Africa because we're lied about so much. And as time went by, I discovered that, well, they're lying pretty much about so many people, the Germans and lots more.
Right, right. I don't know if you want to divulge any hits, I mean, information about your family or are you married, kids or anything like that. You don't have to, but I'm just asking just to ask, you know.
I'm just a single guy. You can
say
that.
Okay, no, that's fine. You're probably better off. That's fine. You can get more done that way, wouldn't you say?
No, there is a good point. That's how it works. Ask Hitler. Hitler.
That's right. Yeah, you're right about that. Well, anyway, I've watched some of your videos, and one thing I noticed about you, you're very you really cover a lot of information, and it's all excellent information. I remember one video I watched of you that stuck in my mind was a video that you were talking about the weaponry that was used. Was that a Rhodesian war or something that you were showing the weaponry of the whites that you had or something? I thought that was an interesting video.
It must be that you saw part of my presentation at the Fash Bash. And that was out of a lecture that I prepared called 50 Years of Race War in Southern Africa. And in there, I had Rhodesian weaponry, but many people only saw the portion with the South African weaponry, which was very impressive stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a really good video. Now, is that video up anywhere?
No, I've kind of kept it away. I want to actually turn it into a DVD that I can sell.
Okay.
Because there's a whole ton of work that went into that thing. But in a nutshell, what I basically tried to do there, this was a project that came up towards the end of 2018. A bit of the background about why I did that was I was talking to a young Afrikaans guy, young Boer here in South Africa, and we were talking about history in the past. And he was talking about how young whites are demoralized and they feel bad about themselves and everything. And then I said to him, but you know, what about our history? Have you seen some of the things that we did in the past, even though we're just a small group of whites? And out of that, I did research and I put together this talk called 50 Years of Race War in Southern Africa, because whites from it was basically the Portuguese, the Rhodesians, and the South Africans. Mm-hmm. We fought wars that spanned 40 or 50 years in total.
Yeah. All right. So that maybe we could start off with that. Now, you were living in Rhodesia, you said, in the beginning?
Yes, that's where I was born. Okay. I was born there in the 60s.
Okay, so... I'm a little older than you. So if you were born in the 60s, that's when things are really, I guess, really were cranking there, huh?
Yes, the 60s was a wild time. And for us in Rhodesia, things really hotted up into the 70s. And that was when, as a child and a teenager, I started noticing a lot more, because right. that was when we were really getting down to the wire there.
Right. Okay. So, because I remember this in history, but you know, you have to understand, we in the United States, they really don't like to let us know what's going on in South Africa, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. I've noticed that.
Yeah. So we're kind of dumb in regards to, I mean, to be honest with you, you're the only one that I've really learned what's going on in South Africa, because there's no really not many people, you know, that are really letting it be known, you know?
Absolutely. And people in our part of the world have either been silenced or they've been very afraid. There have been a great many people, especially military people and even politicians, who wrote books, but the books were published mostly here in Southern Africa, mostly in South Africa. And these are probably the only true first-person accounts of what happened here. And of course, as you know, the mass media won't be telling you what the whites have written. And so it's only whites studying these books that, or even knowing some of these people who have managed to piece together some of this stuff. Right. And I want to tell you, there are soldiers and intelligence people and officers who are still alive, and they're too afraid even now to talk about it. Right. And I even know a guy from Rhodesia who was in the special branch. He's currently living in the United States, and years ago already he told me he's living there. He's not going to open his mouth about anything. Wow. They're so afraid.
All right. I'm going to barrage you with a bunch of questions, okay? You know, things that interest me that I want to know about, because I never really studied South Africa. So let's just give everyone a little bit of a background on South Africa, and let's go way back to the beginning. Okay. If you can answer these questions, I hope you can. When did South Africa, that's what we're really concerned about. When did the white men get in there and start controlling what was going on there?
Okay, there are two groups of people who came to Africa, to the southern part of Africa first. The first were the Portuguese. The Portuguese were the first ones to explore the coast. And on the west coast of southern Africa, they established a settlement in what is now Angola, which is a black country. That is the oldest white settlement in southern Africa. The Portuguese in total had settlements in that part of Africa for 500 years. They settled there even before whites went to the to North America.
Wow.
Yes. And then the next people who came to Southern Africa was actually as a result of the Royal Navy and ships going to Asia. I think it was the British. They wanted to set up a sort of a post where the ships could stop and get supplies and water, etc. And that's how they came to the Cape. And it was merely to have a sort of a supply place for the ships that they set up a little settlement. And as time went by also, and as European wars took place, the ownership of this little piece of the Cape was actually changed hands. It changed hands from the British to the Dutch to the French back to the British and so on. But little by little, other whites started coming here and for some reason or other started settling around the southern tip of Africa. And then later, as the presence of these whites increased, the British took control of it. And a portion, the southern portion of what is South Africa, the Cape Colony, became a British colony on the southern tip of Africa. And in there came Dutch and Germans, who later became what are known as the Boers.
Okay. Now, so South Africa, would it become mainly white down there? Is that what happened?
On the southern tip of South Africa, now you ask a very interesting question, and this is, you know, where do the blacks come from? Where does everybody come from? Well, when the whites got to the southern tip of South Africa, they actually found a people there known as the Khoi. And another term for the Khoi is also the San people. These are non-whites. They are non-whites, but they're not blacks. They are a different kind of human being. They're a smaller kind of people. The blacks that you know, the blacks that you see in Southern Africa, these people, the dark-skinned people, like your dark-skinned Americans, your black Americans, these people are known as Bantu, and they originally come from West Africa, from far in the north where Nigeria and those countries are. They came down through Africa over a period of about 2,000 years. They first came to the center of Africa at the equator, and then from the center of Africa, they started spreading down southwards, directly southwards, but also east and west, and they started settling on the coasts. So those people ran into the Khoi people who lived here before them. Now, the Khoi people did not have large communities. They did not have the population numbers of the blacks. And as these black people moved down through Africa, they actually chased and genocided and killed all the Khoi as they came across them. And these Khoi ended up in the southern tip of Africa and the southwest portion of Southern Africa. The blacks themselves, when they got to South Africa itself, they moved down the east coast of South Africa. And so the first time that the whites and the blacks actually met, the whites were traveling sort of northeastwards out of the Cape, and they met the blacks who were coming southwards down the coast, and they met at the Great Fish River. So the whites were going north and the blacks were going south. So the southernmost territory in South Africa did not have the black people that you associate Africa with. They did not exist at the time the whites came.
All right, let me ask you this. See, my impression, and this is what I thought, okay? Again, being propagandized by people here, that
understood.
The blacks, okay, here's what I was taught. The blacks all lived in South Africa, and then the whites came over, the Dutch or the Portuguese or British or whatever, whatever one you pick here, and they just killed all the blacks and, you know, got the blacks all in submission, and then they took over everything, you know, they, you know, all this country, South country of Africa, and that's how it all started. So apparently that's not the way it happened, huh?
That's not quite the way it happened. And also, on the topic of genocides, later on, when we get a chance, let me tell you about the greatest genocide that actually did take place in South Africa that they never, ever tell you about. And that's a topic for maybe a little bit later in our chat. I can tell you about that.
All right. So, again, you know, we look at Africa as just being, you know, completely black, you know, and then the whites, you know, went into Africa and, you know, colonialism took over and just destroyed the country of blackness. That's what we've been taught, right?
Not quite the truth. And another thing also about the blacks of Africa that they leave out, and I really should find a certain chart for you, is when the whites came to Africa, there weren't large numbers of blacks here. Because these blacks were so backward and they weren't very good at providing for themselves, their populations were very small. And their populations were not that great. The vast majority of black population growth in Africa has taken place in the last 100 years since white colonialism. White people, forget about the few blacks that were killed, white people are directly responsible for the massive population explosion of blacks in Africa. The black population used to be very tiny, and the whites, it's white medicine and white science and whites assisting them, even white doctors, white missionaries going and assisting them. Whites are directly responsible for 90% of the massive population explosion of blacks. Another thing is blacks also used to die from starvation in Africa. From the time of colonialism, the whites saw to it that blacks were always fed. No matter how racist whites ever were, you will not find any time when black people starved to death under white rule. This never, never happened. And if you look even in modern times, even in the last 50, 60 years, every single instance of blacks starving to death is under black rule.
Okay. All right. Let me ask you this then, or make a statement. So when whites, let's just get how many were, would you say, total Africa, how many would be white and how many would be black?
You know? Are you talking currently?
Go back to when, go back to as far back as you can, when the whites started coming there, you know, and they started developing, okay? It got to the point that there was X amount of whites, X amount of blacks, because then I want to focus into how everything developed with the agriculture and all that. So
okay. I would be guessing, I'd have to go and do some digging after this, but my best guess is that in the whole of Africa, there were probably only a couple of million blacks in all of Africa.
Wow.
Put together at the time that the whites originally came. Okay. It wasn't like there were 200 million blacks here. It was nothing like that. The black population was much, much smaller. Even as far back in South Africa as 1940, the number of blacks in South Africa itself, the number of blacks versus the whites, the blacks only outnumbered the whites by 3-1. And that was as recent as 1940.
Okay, here's a question that just popped up in my mind. All right. Okay, so if that's the case, when they talk about slavery and taking blacks out of Africa, because I've seen figures, and this is kind of strange. They have figures, the slave trade took 100 million blacks out of Africa.
If they took large numbers of blacks out of Africa, the only place that they took them from is West Africa.
Okay.
You're talking, because those countries in West Africa, Nigeria and all those places, in fact, some of those countries, if you look at some of those countries there, you'll see they even have got borders that are straight lines. Do you know that some of those territories, the reason they got those straight lines is because those were places where they came to pick up the slaves, and those countries were created as a direct result of slavery itself. But those slaves were all taken from West Africa. And another thing you need to keep in mind is that slavery itself in the rest of colonial Africa, there was little to no slavery of blacks in southern Africa.
Okay.
But the whites did not enslave the blacks.
Okay. Do you think that figure is high, 100 million or whatever they say? I mean, that seems high to me.
I would have to go back and see what I can find about population statistics. Maybe my population statistics of a few million is too low. Maybe it is higher. But you've got to appreciate that the number of blacks in West Africa, which is where they come from and where they've lived, their population density up there is much greater than if you go south. Because remember, as you're going south, their population density is decreasing. Okay. And by the time that they meet up with the whites, The whites themselves are not large in number, by the way. The number of whites who came to Africa is a tiny portion of what went to North America. And from what I've read, most of the reason why whites went to North America was because Africa was so disease-ridden and dangerous. Whites themselves died in large numbers also in Africa. It was a very diseased continent. We've got some illnesses here that I don't think you'll easily find in other places. And many of these diseases were incurable, and it's only in the time of colonialism that whites began to find cures for these diseases. Even when I was a kid, there were diseases that we had to be careful of. A simple example in Rhodesia was a disease called bilharzia. Bilharzia was a thing that you got in the rivers, and they had a very bad cure for it. And it wasn't, you know, was I as a kid even stayed out of rivers because of that. But there were many diseases that affected the blacks. You've got malaria, tuberculosis, etc. And these things were dangerous, and that's what kept most of the whites away from Africa. But it was white people who solved these problems, and the moment whites found cures, they began to cure the blacks. So that is also where the population explosion comes from. And just a bit of background about black breeding habits, etc. The blacks, as a rule, have large, large numbers of children. And in their history, prior to the whites coming, large numbers of their children died from natural causes. They didn't even reach the ages of 9 and 10, etc. So these people, for survival purposes, have always had large, large numbers of children. And it only enabled them to survive with a minor population growth until whites came and fed them and gave them medicines. And then their population just exploded straight through the roof.
Wow.
Okay. I must find some charts. Maybe we can talk about it again and show you some charts.
Yeah. So in reality, it wasn't until the whites came there and, you know, got things going, everything really going good, the blacks probably would have still been living in huts today if it wasn't for whites, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely true. Absolutely true. They'd still be living in huts. They'd still be farming and hunting the way they used to. In fact, when I was a child in Rhodesia, there were things called tribal trust lands. And a tribal trust land was basically a native reserve where the blacks can live according to their normal previous methods. They built huts. They went and hunted animals. They grew a few crops for themselves, etc. And they lived like that even in those times. And there are still large numbers of blacks in Africa even now who still live like that. It is the white man who came and changed everything.
All right. Now, one of the things that whites get criticized for is that they went into Africa to steal all their precious metals and valuables and all those type of things. So would you say that that's a true statement?
There is truth to that. Let me explain some of the motivating factors that drove whites when whites came to Africa. There were whites who came here specifically because they heard tales of gold and rich empires. And even the Dutch sent people deep into what is now South Africa, actually hunting for these mythical empires that actually didn't exist. So I think what I need to differentiate here is between the different kinds of whites and what they were doing. On the one hand, you had governments like the British government, which was busy with its trade to Asia, and they needed a place for the ships. But then what you had was you had whites slowly coming in and living around around the harbor and those areas, and starting to grow food and stuff which they were selling to the British and so on. So you had this small influx of whites coming from all over, and as time went by, these whites themselves started growing in number and started wanting to do things. So just to give you some background, one of the motivating factors that drove some of the movements of the whites were private whites who decided they wanted to do something. What happened was in the Cape Colony where the British ruled, the British, as far back as the 1800s, already were dealing with people and treating all people as equals. And you had these people of Dutch, German descent, Dutch, German, French descent, who later became the Boers. They were living there. Many of them, by the way, who came to Africa were themselves Christians who fled from Europe because of persecution of their version of Christianity. So they left Europe to just find a place where they can do their own thing. Like some of your founding fathers were also, let's call it, religious nuts. And so we had these religious nuts who lived here. And some of them grew tired of the way the British treated them. And then some of them decided, because many of them, many of these, let's call it private citizens living in the Cape Colony, they went and explored deep into Africa. They went thousands of miles into Africa. They saw tribes. They went and looked around and so forth. And then there were those who said, well, they said that there are empty spaces in Africa where they could live. And they began to think of private ventures to go into Africa, get away from the British, and set up their own states. And that is where the Boers come from. The Boers engaged in many adventures which resulted in them fighting the blacks and in them settling places. But they were very much like, you know, let's say a bunch of Americans grab their guns and their trucks and they decide they want to go and live in some other place and set up a thing. It was a similar kind of adventure. It was not driven by the governments. It was not driven by the rich. It was driven by their desire to be away from British rule and to rule themselves. So that is where the Boers come into play. And all the Boers were interested in was finding places where they could live and farm. They farmed, and that was their way of life. And so that is where things like the Battle of Blood River and those things come from, were attempts and ventures to go in different directions to try and establish sort of internal colonies. Let me also add to this the story of the greatest massacre of blacks that happened in Southern Africa that they never tell you about. Yeah. In the 1820s, there was a Zulu chief. The Zulus live on the east coast of South Africa. They live right by the sea. The Zulus came to be ruled by a king called Chaka. And Chaka was a warrior king, and he developed some ideas of conquest. That in itself is a very fascinating story, but I'm not going to go into that here. Chaka decided to set out and conquered all the closely related tribes that later became known as the Zulus. Mm-hmm. And then he took them and he created this military empire. And Chaka had his territory on the east coast. He had his Zulu land on the east coast. And then as he expanded, he began to fight against other black tribes all over the show. There were black tribes further down on the east coast, and there were tribes in the center of South Africa. What resulted were a series of black-on-black wars that were extremely bloody. They took place round about somewhere between 1818 and about 1828. There were these bloody, bloody wars between the blacks. And the Zulus set out to slaughter basically everybody. And what they often did, also like ancient whites did, is sometimes they would kill all the men and then take in the women and children. But anyway, in these wars that took place, they killed at least about 1.4 million blacks. And in the very center of South Africa, where I now live, which is like Johannesburg, Pretoria, the very center of South Africa, they totally exterminated all the blacks who lived here. There was nobody here. And some of these Boers who were traveling deep into South Africa, they came across these places where where the Zulus had killed everybody. Plus, the Zulus themselves also split in two. And there was another tribe of the Zulus run by a guy called Mzilikazi. And Mzilikazi came to occupy the center of South Africa. And when he came to occupy the center, he told his troops to kill absolutely everybody. And so he then occupied the center of South Africa. But he also moved a bit to the north. And so there were big chunks of totally empty space. Some of the white Christians who came into the center of Africa, into the center of South Africa, they not only came across these places where the blacks had been killed, but they even picked up black children and took the black children back to the Cape because their parents had been killed. They took their black children to the Cape and they raised them in the Cape. So from all these white adventurers, they started picking up details of this enormous massacre and slaughter. And then the whites started looking and they were saying, look, there are huge chunks in the center of South Africa that are empty. There's nobody there. And that's where they also started putting together groups of people with ox wagons so that they could go to those areas and occupy them. And later they moved into places that later became known as the Boer Republics of the Orange Free State and later the Transvaal. And as these whites then settled there, then they would later come into conflict with these Zulus. And in the one case, and also another thing from the Cape, by the way, is that in the Cape, in the early days, there were also whites who had black women or other Khoi women as their wives. And from that, you had a what we would call a colored population that also grew up in the Cape, which was a mixed race group of whites, Khois, blacks, etc. Some of these were known as the Griquas. Now, those mixed race people also made moves into parts of Africa to seize chunks of South Africa for themselves. And an interesting war took place where the Boers, the whites, teamed up with the Griquas and they fought the Zulus under Mzilikazi and they chased them out of what is now South Africa and they went on to settle in what is now Zimbabwe. And so this white and colored army defeated them and that's how they seized this chunk of territory. But that massacre, I can send you the links to it. It's even mentioned even on something like Wikipedia. You can go and read about it. But you'll never, ever, ever hear the liberals, the Jews, or the mass media ever talking about the greatest actual genocide that took place in South Africa was black on black. And nobody, and by the way, nobody has ever asked the Zulus for reparations.
Yeah, right. Well, you know why? Because there's no Jews involved. That's why.
Absolutely. So those are the private things. Now, what you also had, to answer your question about mines, you also had people coming into South Africa, and you also had whites who were coming here, adventurers, and some of them were prospectors, and they were looking for gold and other minerals. And initially, like when the Boers came and settled in the Orange Free State and the Transvaal, they were only interested in farmland. They wanted farmland. They built towns and cities for themselves. That's all they cared about. Then these others came, and some of them started finding minerals. And then it turned out that the greatest mineral discoveries were in the Republic of the Transvaal, and that is where they discovered gold, and further to the south they discovered diamonds. And then you had people, there were, by the way, Jews who did come. The moment that gold and diamonds were discovered, you had Jews coming, even German Jews like Alfred Beit and so forth. They came to southern Africa, and they also started getting hold of the mines. And you also had people like Cecil Rhodes from Britain, who was a Freemason. And Cecil Rhodes came to southern Africa, and he was also working with the Rothschilds and the Oppenheimers and all those. And they then took control of these diamond and gold mines. And that is where they made lots of money. But then from there onwards, whites began to look all over the show for minerals, and they started discovering minerals in other countries. And for example, what is now Zimbabwe, which was Rhodesia, they also discovered some gold or something there, and they struck a deal with the blacks. And by the way, just another thing about the whites of southern Africa. In all the moves that the whites of southern Africa made, there was often diplomacy which took place between the whites and the blacks and the white businessmen and the black leaders. They didn't always just attack each other. There was also negotiations and meetings and diplomacy. And there are instances where there are written agreements where you can go, if we dig enough, you'll find actual written agreements where the whites and the blacks struck a deal. And for example, in the case of Rhodesia, there is a written agreement. I'd have to go and look it up, but I've got the actual text of the written agreement. It's called the Rudd Concession. The Rudd Concession was a deal that was struck between the whites and that Zulu tribe that fled to Rhodesia, led by Imzilikazi. They are now known as the Matabele. The whites went to the king of the Matabele, who later was Lobengula, and they went to him and they said to him, "We'd like to strike this deal with you. We want to go to the north. We want to mine gold. And, you know, we'd like your permission to go and settle there and mine." Now here you must understand a number of things about the blacks. The blacks were so backward that there are things that the blacks had that the blacks did not understand the value of it. So for the blacks, when white men came to them and white men said, "Listen, we want to go over there and we want to dig into the ground and we want to get some rocks out of the ground, you know, is that okay by you?" The blacks said, "Sure, you know, this is what we want." And to give you an example of a formal treaty between the blacks and the whites, in the Rudd Concession, for example, so the whites negotiated with Lobengula, and in the Rudd Concession, Lobengula asked the whites for guns. He wanted muskets. He wanted a certain number of muskets. He wanted ammunition for the muskets. And do you know that he even wanted a steam gunboat to put on the Zambezi River? So he wanted a naval vessel, basically, on the Zambezi River that was his. And the whites came and they gave him everything that he asked for. They paid for it. And they then went and settled in the north and they carried on. But later on, as the whites moved in, initially, to give you an example, in what is now Zimbabwe, the whites who went there were about 10 or 15,000 whites. So it wasn't many whites. And they went and they settled there and they started doing their mining and then they started doing farming and more whites came in. And then a time came where then the blacks started clashing with them. And that is how much of the problems occurred between the races. Whites would move to an area, they'd settle down, they'd have blacks as neighbors, and then later on the two start fighting. There are times also where, I'll give you another example, where the Boers, for example, in their search for a new country, one group of Boers went along the east coast and they went all the way up to, I think it was the Tugela River. which borders on the Zulu kingdom. And they went there and they wanted to settle just south of the Zulu kingdom on the other side of this river. And they went and they had meetings with the king of the Zulus at the time. I forget his name now. But they went and met with him. Among them was their leader, the leader of the Boers was a guy called Piet Retief, I think it was. So Piet Retief and his guys went to have some formal meetings with the king of the Zulus. So they went to his capital and they met with him and they said to him, listen, we've got some people and we want to settle to the south of your river and we want to farm there and we want to live there. And so the Zulu king said to them, okay, you can do that, but first I want you to do something for me. So the Zulu king then gave them a task to do. The Zulu king said to them, what you must do is there's another tribe that has stolen some tens of thousands of cattle from me. And for the record, the blacks viewed cattle as money. That was their money. So he said, you must go and get those cattle back for me, and then I'll talk to you. This is my view. My view is that the king of the Zulus was testing the whites and that he did not believe that the whites would actually go and get all the thousands of cattle back. But the leader of the Boers said, yes, we'll go and do this. And so the leader of the Boers went and they went and they found the cattle and they brought all the cattle back to the Zulus. And then they said, you know, we've done what you've asked. We'd like to talk to you. And again, my view is that the Zulu king may have looked on this with disfavor, realizing that these whites are dangerous and that they are willing to do things. Anyway, so he invited them for talks. And when they came and they spent time in his kraal, at a certain point, he ordered his warriors to kill everybody. So they killed everybody. They killed all the whites. They took them to an execution place. They killed everybody. There were some Christian missionaries who were witnesses to this. And so that actually enraged the Boers. By the way, and when they killed the leaders, the Zulu king ordered all his warriors to go across the river and to kill all the whites on the other side of the river. So they launched attacks everywhere. They killed hundreds of whites, but there were pockets of whites who did survive. And this actually so enraged the Boers in the Cape when they heard this that they gathered together again another privately funded army, and they got their ox wagons. They even bought themselves two small cannons, and they actually traveled all the way back to the east, back to Natal, to go and fight the Zulus in revenge of what they had done to Piet Retief. And that actually was how a thing called the Battle of Blood River took place. It was a reprisal by the whites against the treachery of this Zulu king. But in Southern African history, there is a great deal of negotiations and deals and agreements that everybody forgets about.
Right. So if we can kind of like sum up, what are the big lies then? That seems like that's a big lie. And how, see, they want you, they people want you us to believe that the whites were the problem killing the blacks. And now, according to what you're saying with the Zulus were killing their own people, you know, too. I mean, that's for sure. A million or whatever you said, killing them all. And so that's not like a mentioned point here. It's just what the whites have done, right?
Yes, it's what you are hearing is pure propaganda. It's like your Holocaust tale. You know, it's pure propaganda. You are hearing a totally one-sided story. You never hear there's a whole bunch of unmentioned facts that are just left out of the whole story. And that is a great deal of what happened in Africa. And you see, once whites went into places, even when the whites were just a few, the whites were so organized that within a period of time, they became quite strong, even though they weren't large in number. And the blacks would at times start seeing the whites as a threat, and then they start attacking the whites. Then the whites fight back, and to the amazement of the blacks, the whites end up beating them. And there were many different wars like this. These small-scale wars between black tribes and whites carried on all over the show as whites expanded. And you see, another thing about whites that you've got to understand, a difference between whites and blacks. Blacks, before whites came here, blacks are nomads. And blacks moved around. Even the Zulus themselves, I mentioned that they got a capital. Their capital wasn't like a permanent place, okay? Because their form of farming is known as slash and burn. They go to a place, they clear out, they burn down the trees, they cut down the trees, they farm there for 4 or 5 years. Then the soil produces no crops anymore. Then they physically move to a new place. And so the blacks themselves, at no time in Africa will you find that there were black cities. The only city in the whole of Africa that I know of is Timbuktu up in West Africa. And Timbuktu, you will find there were lots of Muslims and Arabs lived in Timbuktu, and they were like the sort of educators of, they were the intelligentsia of Timbuktu. But other than that, Timbuktu is the only thing that comes to being a permanent city that existed in Africa. Everywhere else, no matter how many blacks there were, the blacks were constantly on the move. They moved to another place, then they settled down, they build their huts again, they live there for a couple of years and so on. So the blacks had so much territory to move in that the blacks themselves didn't mind giving away territory because they didn't see territory as having value. And whereas when white civilization, which is a much more advanced form of living, you know, when whites come to a place, whites start building things and they build their infrastructure, and the infrastructure strengthens them and benefits them. For example, whenever whites built towns and so forth, they also started building forts, just like you Americans did. You built lots of forts to protect against the Indians. Well, the whites did the same thing. And so what happens is when whites settle in a place, even if some are on farms, they can run to forts and towns if they come under attack. And it just happens that even when the whites are outnumbered, the whites with their weapons and their organization can often defend themselves, and they can physically beat blacks who outnumber them. And that's what happened time and time again. And the white man's power keeps growing because more whites come in, children are born, their populations grow. And as small as they are, they start dominating the blacks. And another thing is also that the blacks are fighting among themselves as well. Like in what is now Zimbabwe, the Matabele tribe that moved to the south, that Zulu tribe became known as the Matabele. To the north of them was another tribe known as the Shona. And the Matabele, who were warriors, would regularly raid the Shona. They treated the Shona as if the Shona were their animals. They'd go and raid them, steal their women, kill them, and do what they did with the Shona as they pleased. Now, another thing that nobody tells you is that the white man brought peace to Africa. And he brought peace to Africa by being strong. The white man actually stopped blacks from fighting each other. The white man would actually set himself up as the referee, and the white man would actually stop blacks. And this happened all across Africa where colonialism occurred. All across Africa, whites came and started implementing law. And the blacks, so if one tribe just attacks another and just kills another for no reason at all, then the whites will step in and they'll say, hey, you must stop doing that, you know, and the whites might punish them. Or these other tribes that are attacked will come to the white man and say, please help me. These people are killing my women and children. And so the whites found themselves getting involved in these things. The white men then would go and punish whoever needed to be punished. And then as time went by, the whites and blacks also started integrating more, in the sense that these blacks were living a subsistence living. These blacks can easily die from starvation during a drought. And as time goes by, they discover that they can earn money from the whites, from mines, from farm work, etc. And they begin to realize that they can live a better life by working for the whites. Mm-hmm. And so slowly the power of the whites grows and grows, and it takes control of everything. And I will say one final thing. I cannot emphasize enough the importance of the law, the legal aspect of whites bringing law to Africa. Even when I was a child, blacks used to say that whites are fairer than other blacks. Mm-hmm. When it comes to fairness, blacks knew that whites are more fair than other blacks. Our concept of fairness stands out, and until we came along, they didn't understand that concept at all, and they came to appreciate it.
Okay, I got a question here. So, to kind of look at this, you know, like I'm trying to look from outside in, where did it all go wrong? I mean, really wrong. I mean, what can you really pinpoint? See,
where did the?
Go ahead.
So you want to know why we actually started fighting each other in the end?
Yeah,
here's
the deal. I look at Africa like they're just a bunch of savages killing themselves over there, and especially now killing whites. And then I look at Angola, and this comes into mind because you're talking about the 60s and 70s. Angola, Rhodesia, you know, they were really fighting and killing each other there. So what went wrong to make all that happen?
Okay, let me tell you what happened. When the whites started finding minerals and settling in various parts of Africa, you then had the rush for Africa that took place in the late 1800s. Round about 1890, other countries in Europe, including Germany, Belgium, etc., as they started seeing that the British and the French and the Portuguese had these huge territories and these territories were valuable, other whites from Europe began the scramble for Africa. And in the scramble for Africa, everybody from Europe came to grab what chunk of Africa they could. So you find that within a space of about 20 years, it happened very quickly. Within 20 years, the white countries of Europe seized literally every inch of Africa, except for the odd place like Ethiopia. They came and they seized all of Africa and controlled it. Most of Africa was controlled, so you'd have a French country next to a German country, next to a Portuguese country. And so in most of these places, your population of whites wasn't very big. You would have a country, let's say the size of France or bigger than France, ruled by about 10,000 to 15,000 whites, sometimes even less. So a tiny amount of whites come in, they got a little army, and they also start bringing in blacks who also fight for them as well. As white civilization takes control, they start sorting out the tribes and start controlling the whole region. So you had colonialism existed in Africa for roughly about 75 years at the most. It wasn't very long. Colonialism, like I say, was maybe 50 to 75 years. In that short space of time, this entire continent that had no roads, no bridges, no nothing, whites from all across Europe came and started building roads, railways, bridges, cities, etc., all across Africa, and started making use of Africa. However, the world wars caused some of this to change, because when the British went to war against the Germans in World War I and the Germans lost, all the German territories, for example, were seized by the British and then became British. So by the time Adolf Hitler, for example, came to power in Germany, Germany didn't have any colonies in Africa, whereas Britain ruled about a third of Africa. So where it really went wrong was with the rise of communism, Jewish Bolshevism in Russia, and World War II. The Soviet Union, as far back as the 1920s, the Soviet Union, Stalin in particular, remember that the Jewish Bolsheviks set out to rule the world. Once they had the Soviet Union, they actually started communist parties in every other country that they could, including all across Europe, etc. And you had a thing called the Comintern, the Communist International. The Comintern's plan was to rule the world, create a communist party in every single country. And as an aside, maybe for another day, is the Communist Party of South Africa was the second or third communist party in the world. And this Communist Party of South Africa, by the way, was pure white. It was whites, and it was white communists who wanted to rule a white communist South Africa. But anyway, they tried to start communism everywhere in the world. And then at a point, the Russians came up with the idea to support what they called all native movements. And in actual fact, some blacks from South Africa, blacks and coloreds, went to Russia in the 1920s to negotiate with the Russians. And in 1928, the Russians issued an order to the South African Communist Party, which was all white, by the way. And it told this white Communist Party that they must work for a black communist republic in South Africa. The whites were not pleased with that. But anyway, they decided that they were going to destabilize all of Europe's empires, especially the British Empire. So before World War II started, the Soviets already had their fingers in the pie all across Asia and Africa. And they started these movements for independence. Then when World War II took place and Britain and France, etc., were using their colonial black troops, etc., these blacks also started putting pressure on the British, etc., saying, you know, we also want independence, etc. So by the time World War II ended, you had the communists having these movements all across Africa and Europe, Africa and Asia, where now there was this clamoring, this great clamoring for independence. But in actual fact, the main driving force was actually the Soviet Union. Mm-hmm. And the KGB assisted in all this. And from this, shortly after World War II, immediately there were rebellions that started taking place all over the show. The first rebellion in Africa was in East Africa. Kenya was the first place where blacks started murdering the whites and murdering white farmers and chopping whites to death. And the British fought a war in Kenya. Then another place that went up in smoke for the British was Malaysia. They fought a big war in Malaysia. Malaysia was basically Britain's Vietnam, and it went wrong. They really struggled in Malaysia. And what eventually happened was, after World War II, the British found themselves with these uprisings and potential uprisings, because immediately in the 1950s, an immediate thing in the aftermath of World War II was that blacks all across Africa started organizing politically, and the communists were behind this. And then by the 60s, by the late 50s, 60s, this was starting to lead to violence. Now, what I'm about to say is my personal opinion, having looked at this. My personal opinion is that when the British saw all these uprisings and they were fighting everywhere and it was not going well, the British realized that they did not have the military power and the money to defend their massive empire. Because the British controlled about a third of Africa, but there's no ways in hell the British army could have actually beaten off all the blacks in a third of Africa. So in 1960, the British Prime Minister, Macmillan, came to South Africa. And in Cape Town, in the Parliament in Cape Town, he gave a speech known as the Winds of Change speech. And Macmillan said in the South African Parliament, he said that the people must realize that there is a great desire for independence, that all these people in Asia and Africa want their own countries, and that this must be accepted as a fact and it must be taken into account. And what he basically was announcing was the withdrawal of the British from their empire. And immediately after that, the British gave independence to every single country, every single black and Asian country that was in their empire. And they tried to substitute political and military control for economic control. And they created what was called the Commonwealth of Nations. So the Commonwealth still exists, and the Commonwealth is an attempt by Britain to have some kind of economic finger in the pie of what used to be their former colonies. But they dumped their entire empire immediately. And when Britain pulled out of Africa and everywhere, this just gave more impetus to the blacks that they must move forward. And the Soviets, the Russians, and by then the Chinese were in on this thing. China was already in Africa in the 1960s, already training blacks and arming blacks. The Russians were doing the same. And from that, you had what came to be known as the Liberation Wars. And the Liberation Wars were basically the southern portion of Africa, because whites were the most, in terms of population and population density, the greatest number of whites were in the southern part of Africa, from South Africa moving northwards into what is now Zimbabwe, Mozambique, Angola. And whites firmly controlled southern Africa. And so when the British left and the French left and everybody left, the Portuguese were the only country from Europe that decided that they're not going to leave. They are going to retain their territories. Then you had South Africa, which was very powerful. And then you had the British colony of Rhodesia, where I come from, where the whites were in a position of power and they'd been ruling themselves since 1923, and they'd been assisting the British everywhere. Everywhere where Britain was fighting, Rhodesia also fought. And the whites of Rhodesia said, well, if you're giving independence to other countries, why can't you give independence to Rhodesia, but Rhodesia is going to be ruled by white people? And the British would not tolerate that. And that is where you had the Rhodesian Rebellion, where their most loyal colony actually openly rebelled against them in 1965. So the Rhodesian Rebellion, the Portuguese fighting for their territory, and South Africa fighting for the rest of it, those let's call it political forces, those are the political forces that fought against communist aggression, against Russia and China arming blacks and sending blacks to attack us. And from there until the time of South Africa coming under black rule, that 50 years of race war was where Russia and China and their allies, including Cuba, East Germany, Eastern Europe, where they came and they assisted the blacks in destroying white political power. And then, of course, And if I may just say one final thing,
yeah.
the whites who lived in Southern Africa opposed black rule on the basis that even though we are few, the fact is we are running the place and it's working well and it's progressing. We are all progressing. The countries are moving forward. We've got great our growth in GDP, for example, at times our GDP was growing by 10% per annum, to give you an example. And the whites simply said, we cannot live here under black rule because blacks are incompetent. And not only are the blacks incompetent and stupid, but you've also got blacks who are communists. They are driven by the Soviet Union and Russia, by the Soviet Union and China, and their allegiances to those countries. And when they come to power, they will destroy capitalism and implement communism. And so we also fought communism in that sense. So
okay, here's my thought, okay, because we have been brainwashed again over here, and we hear this, you know, apartheid, and the South Africa now has, you know, it's been broken, and blacks now have their rights and they're free, and the whites have oppressed them, and Nelson Mandela comes in there and frees all the blacks, and the bad whites are going to get what they're going to get. You know what I'm saying? I mean, this is what we've been taught. And what I get out of what you're saying is, yeah, Mandela, you're a communist. I mean, that's
yes.
Right?
Yes.
I mean, that's what I'm getting here.
Absolutely. In fact, when Nelson Mandela was on trial, among the documents presented at his trial, and by the way, he had a free and fair trial, he had a document in his own handwriting called How to Be a Good Communist. It was 93 pages in Nelson Mandela's own handwriting. And Nelson Mandela, when we fought the blacks, we also referred to them as communist terrorists. Mm. And that's what they were. They were using terrorism. All that terrorism that you Americans talk about these days, well, nobody mentions that when we were fighting them, they were carrying out terrorism. Terrorism, they were killing civilians, they were planting bombs, they were planting landmines. In fact, at a point, I can show you some pictures and I can take you through some things and you can see for yourself some of the atrocities that the blacks have carried out that I bet you don't hear a thing about.
Right. Yeah, because that's always, I always kind of knew the Mandela communist connection. And he went to jail, right? For how many years? He went to jail, right?
Yes, he was in jail for 27 years. Wow. In fact, Nelson Mandela was found guilty of treason. He had been arrested twice. And the second time they caught him, by the way, when they caught him the second time, they caught a bunch of blacks and Jews together in one fell swoop. So they found Mandela with a bunch of blacks and a bunch of Jews assisting him. They grabbed the whole lot. There were about 12 or 13 of them. There was the Rivonia trial where they put everybody on trial. And do you know what they were planning? They were planning to unleash 7,000 terrorists across South Africa. Wow. That was their plan. They were going to bomb places, blow up people, kill people. That was Mandela's plan. And by the way, the Soviet Union would send submarines that would drop off people along the coasts and so forth. There was lots of stuff going on in Southern Africa, and our military, the white military and the white intelligence people, we were monitoring all these things all the time.
Wow. I mean, it's just amazing because we, in this country here, look at Mandela as the savior of Africa.
That is one of the biggest lies. And I'm going to tell you another secret about Southern Africa is, do you know that when the black terrorists, the black communist terrorists started coming into Southern Africa to convert the blacks to communism, there were large numbers of blacks who resisted the conversion to communism. There were large numbers of blacks who said, But will life really be better under black rule? We think that white rule is not so good. And what you had was a large part of the time, here's an untold secret for you. Do you know that most of the black civilians who were murdered during the time of these race wars were killed by black communists, killed black people who resisted communism?
Yeah.
They slaughtered them, they cut them up, they shot them, they cut parts off their bodies. That's what they did. And blacks, there were blacks who were running to the whites, to the police, to the army, saying, help us, help us. There are these guys. And then the whites would go and kill these black terrorists. And that was how these wars actually were fought. And ultimately, it became a battle for the hearts and minds of the blacks, because it became an ugly war in the bush, especially outside of South Africa. Inside of South Africa, it was different, because South Africa is like a superpower. South Africa was like the Germany of Southern Africa. It had tremendous military power, whereas the Portuguese and the Rhodesians didn't have that much military power. So we fought these running battles in the bush of Africa because we were basically fighting to keep the blacks not only away from our farmers, but away from our blacks. And so it was a back and forward thing. There was a war that raged through the bush for years. And then eventually, as time went by, there were blacks who began to either buy into the communist message, or they knew, you know, if I go against the other, they knew that if the white man comes along, the white man's not going to shoot me. But if the white man's gone and the terrorists come, they'll come and cut my body, you know, they'll cut me up. So eventually force and fear wins the day. And eventually they gained control in over a long period of time. And by the way, Mandela was by no means the only black leader. There were other black leaders. There were even better black leaders. There were even more sane black leaders. For example, West Germany sponsored a black prince of the Zulus known as Mangosuthu Buthelezi. The West Germans sponsored him because he was pro-Western. You had some blacks who were pro-Western world, and they didn't want to go for communism. And a bit of an untold story of South Africa is that a war raged in South Africa. At that time, the Zulus were actually friendly to the whites. And the Zulus and Mandela's people clashed, and they waged a war against them amongst themselves for many years. They killed thousands in a black on black war. And the whites gave guns to the Zulus, and the Zulus fought the communists.
Okay, now let's think about here now. What's going on in Africa today that we should be aware of? Because again, we here don't hear any of this stuff. So what's happening, you know, right now in Africa that we should know about?
Okay, let me distinguish between Southern Africa, which is from Angola, Mozambique, Zimbabwe, southwards, and the rest of Africa. In the southern part of Africa, the countries known as South Africa, Namibia, Zimbabwe, Mozambique, Angola, those five countries are still ruled by the same communists who came to power originally. The ANC of South Africa are actually communists, and they rule this country. And they team up with the other communists. And these communists, whenever they feel pressure from the Western world, you'll see them running off to Russia or China. You'll see immediately they start going and chatting to the Russians and the Chinese, because they know that if the West puts too much pressure on them, they can get guns directly from Russia and China to this day. They are commies. One thing I must tell you about them is their training is such that they will lie about South Africa, for example, and tell you that democracy has come to South Africa. But it's actually not true. South Africa has been ruled by the same political party since black rule. The same is true for Zimbabwe. The same is true for Mozambique. The same is true for Angola. All those countries, like if you look at Mozambique and Angola, they've been under black rule since 1974. From 1974 until 2020, they've been ruled by exactly the same political party to this day. So you cannot tell me that that is democracy. You cannot tell me that blacks are able to vote these communists out of power. It is absolutely impossible for, I'm going to repeat this to you. It is impossible for the black people of Southern Africa to vote out the one-party states that rule these countries, and that includes South Africa. Everybody who tells you South Africa is a democracy is lying to you, because the ruling party will not be voted out of power, I assure you. Now, right, the rest of Africa is different.
Okay, so you're saying that South Africa is communist? That's what you're saying?
The people who run the country, no matter how liberal they may appear to be, they are hardcore communists, and their goal is to rule this country forever. And they themselves have made statements to that effect. For example, Winnie Mandela, the wife of Nelson Mandela, once said something like, the ANC, the African National Congress, the ruling party of South Africa, she said, the ANC will rule South Africa until Jesus comes. And these people are atheists. They don't believe Jesus is coming anytime soon. And you'll find that President Zuma said the same thing. Others have said the same thing. And in fact, I'll tell you something from Rhodesia. After we handed over power to the blacks of ZANU who run Zimbabwe, Ian Smith, our prime minister, the white prime minister of that time, in the 1980s, one day he was talking to one of the black members of parliament in Zimbabwe, one of the commies, and he said to the guy, how is it that you blacks converted to communism? And the black guy told him this story. Well, the Russians took us to Cuba and they showed us communism there, and we were not impressed. Then the Russians took us to Russia and they showed us communism there, and we were not impressed. And then one day the Russians said to us, with this system you can remain in power forever. And that is when we converted to communism. Yeah. So everything that you hear about democracy in Southern Africa is a total lie. It's a total sham. Every political party that black people create that opposes these ruling parties is itself destroyed. And sometimes the leaders are killed outright. People are killed. You do not even hear about it.
Right. So what's up with the whites there now then? Pretty bad, right?
The whites are managing to survive. One thing about whites in general is that whites are very adaptable. I myself am very amazed. When I was younger, I didn't expect us to last as long as we did. And I must tell you, I'm very amazed myself by how whites are able to adapt. And whites have adapted very well to South Africa. And whites actually in South Africa, because the population of whites here is bigger than in any other part of Africa, the whites have actually managed to retain a certain amount of influence that is actually quite astounding for their numbers, even though they're only 9% of the population. Mm-hmm. But whites are being driven out everywhere. There are hundreds of thousands of whites who've lost their jobs. And whites are constantly being driven out and shoved to one side as the blacks take more and more control of everything, including businesses, corporations, etc. And the Jews are 100% in bed with the blacks. They love them. I can even show you film footage where Jews and where the chief rabbi of South Africa talks to the president of South Africa, and he lauds him on what an excellent job the blacks are doing in South Africa.
You know what's funny here, Jan? When I look at the United States right now, it's almost an exact replica of what went on there. What's happening here is exactly what went on there. Like the communists, more or less, are taking over, and they're using the blacks, you know, to terrorize everybody, you know, and to do all the dirty work. I mean, this is what I get. I mean, do you see that in the United States?
Absolutely. I was just reading an article by the Gatestone Institute the other day where Black Lives Matter was saying, we are trained Marxists. Mm. And I even saw some film footage where some young white guy from Antifa is saying, well, communism is going to come because capitalism is going to collapse. And I'm like, what the fuck is 2020? And you're talking communism in America? Are you insane? But yeah, there you go. You'll find communism and Jews and these blacks and same things. And you know something, Jim, it's as, you know, your George Floyd protests, which is totally fake. You know, I mean, whatever George Floyd was, he was a criminal and so on. And now everybody's apparently outraged because of his death. Well, in the same way that you had these sort of, let's call it, fake reasons to go and burn down stuff, the same things happened in South Africa. South Africa is much, where South Africa is different to the rest of Africa, is it's got much bigger cities and it's much more industrialized and a higher standard of living than anywhere else in Africa. So yes, the parallels between South Africa and the way things are done in South Africa and were done here is almost identical to your country. In fact, I can even tell you some of the things that I'm seeing in your country that are absolute reruns of South Africa. In the days when the ANC was busy with strikes and killing all across South Africa, they used to talk about their strategy being to make South Africa ungovernable. The goal was to make it ungovernable. And what they meant was that they wanted to stop the police from having effective control over the country. In other words, take parts of the country and make them lawless. Now, if you go and you look at some of the demands made by Antifa and others and Black Lives Matter, you'll see that they're trying to do the same thing in your country right now. They are saying defund the police. They are saying replace the police with anything else. I even came across where they were saying replace the police with religious ministers and psychologists. They are basically trying to create lawlessness in your country. And the reason is not because it's going to make things better. It's because it will allow them to advance the revolution to the next level of brutality. And your police, whatever the faults of your American police are, your police are the only people keeping you safe in your beds at night. And they want to take that away from you using all kinds of bogus nonsense. And of course, you guys mustn't do that.
Yeah, it's really getting to a point here that, you know, that most people just don't see it. They don't, you know, like the Black Lives Matter people, again, are just a front for communism. I mean, I don't know how people don't see that. And they're using the blacks as their weapon to destroy everything. And then, you know, all the people are just giving in and saying, oh, the blacks have been so oppressed, we have to appease them by giving them all these things. And now they want to even give them reparations. But that's a whole nother story. So I guess look into our future, boy. If we don't get this country back, we're gonna be in worse shape than Africa.
I actually want to tell you that as much as you believe you've been misled by liberals and Jews, you've been misled into believing that you need to appease them. That is actually the worst thing you can do. If you appease them and you give in on concrete things, you'll find that A, not only does the appeasement not solve the problem, but you'll find that they'll be back and they'll be demanding even more and they'll be threatening even more violence.
Yeah, that's what I find about the blacks. Like for instance, I saw one video that I think it was a black guy was saying to, I don't know if he's black, it doesn't really matter, but the person was saying when the blacks were kind of going crazy here in the city, don't destroy my shop. I'm behind you. I go along with you and I agree with you. And they didn't give a shit. They burned his place down anyway.
You people, Jews are basically trying to create internal civil war in your country right now. Yeah. I'm not sure how much of it is driven by the immediate desire to get Trump out and to stop Trump being reelected. That seems to me to be a big part of what's freaking them out. I think personally that what's really freaking the Jews out in your country is even the fact that even though Trump is an Israel-loving, Israel loving Gentile, they are freaked out by the fact that the white population is so loyal to voting for Trump, and they don't like this unconscious white unity that is driving Trump. They don't want that. They need to divide white people. And that's why the hue and cry is always racism, racism, racism. Whenever whites do something together or whites have a similar viewpoint, then you'll hear that cry of racism.
Now, I think what's going to happen, this is my opinion, might be wrong, that if Trump gets elected, it's going to get worse.
That's exactly where I'm going with this, is that if Trump is elected, then they'll go crazy. Then they'll try and burn the country down for the next 4 years.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I see. I think that's
and in a sense, this is a kind of a message to the whites: don't vote for Trump if you want peace. In fact, in Rhodesia, when the blacks came to the first election where the blacks could take part, the communist Robert Mugabe actually sent a message to all the blacks, and he said to them, if you don't vote for me, the war will not stop. And that was the message. And in that sense, Black Lives Matter is sending the same message to you guys. If you vote for Trump, the war isn't going to stop.
Well, what do we do? What do we do, Jan? I mean, we look at Trump. I mean, I really don't care for Trump, to be honest with you, because I just, you know, here's the thing with Trump with me, okay? He's not going to help me any by staying in there, because he's pro-Israel, okay? So my viewpoints on the Holocaust and Israel and the Jews, he's not helping me. He's not going to help me. So a lot of people think, you know, if he's in there, he's going to benefit the whites more. But then let's say we get Biden in there. Okay, well, what do you think about him? I mean, really, get Biden in there instead of Trump? I don't know. What do you think about that?
I don't know so much about Biden, but I will agree with you that Trump has been a huge disappointment to the whites. Yeah. Yet the whites are somehow still drawn to him. He's been a total flop. He's not done anything. He's not even stood firm on the wall or any of those things, or Hillary Clinton or any of those things. To me, he was a failure. But somehow, I think his presence is just irritating the Jews, being the miserable, rotten people they are. You know, even when you're good to Jews, it's not good enough. You know. Napoleon had the same problem with the Jews. He emancipated all the Jews, and the Jews still hated him and worked against him. You know, later on, he discovered he had to work against them. You know, in the end, Jim, in the end, after you've gone this way and that way and so forth, in the end, I believe that all white people, no matter how liberal you are, no matter how reasonable you are, no matter what things you do to appease them, in the very end, you're going to find that it's white against non-white, and you're going to have to stand firm. It's got to happen. And if you don't do it, they will steal your country right from under your feet. The Jews are too experienced at this. They've taken too many countries down. They know all the games, you know.
I look at it this way, the positive of having Trump in there, okay? That if Trump gets in there and the blacks start going crazy, then the whites might be forced to say, fuck this. We're not going to allow this to happen. Right? What do you think?
Now, that is the perfect thing that I like, because that's what I've been saying. I've said for a number of years, I've said worse is better. I've observed it in South Africa. I've watched whenever whites appease and step back, it doesn't last. You're giving away constantly, and you're always giving away from your position. In fact, I wrote a book, and maybe I should see if I can send you a PDF copy. I wrote a book, my only political book that I wrote as a warning to people was a book called Government by Deception, Remind me and I'll send you a personal copy. In Government by Deception, I talk about how these people think. And one of the things that I mention in there is that whites will always find that it is things that belong to you that are up for negotiation. Things that belong to the others, things that belong to the blacks and the Jews and what have you, that's not up for discussion. But what is up for discussion is that which belongs to white people, your farms, your money, your businesses, etc. And you will find that they are always on your case telling you that you must give away something of yours to make the other side happy. And when you do it, you will find that it's never enough. Mm-hmm. Then they'll come back and they'll ask for more and more and more. And I totally agree with you. When I looked at us in Southern Africa for years now, I've always said worse is better, because I have noticed among whites that you can go and you can try and educate them as much as you can, and you will manage to educate some of them. Some of them have the foresight and the intelligence that they will believe you. They'll listen to you and they'll say, yes, what you're saying is reasonable and right. I agree with you. But the vast majority will not be concerned unless it comes to pay them a visit. It has to come to their doorstep. A member of their family has to be killed, and so on. Whites are actually amazingly tough. They literally need someone busy kicking in their door, trying to shoot them, before the vast majority of them will actually become scared. And I totally agree with you. If they wage war against white America for 4 years, it might actually be the best thing of all that could happen, because you will find that you are reasonable and you're giving away things and you're giving away more and more, and it doesn't solve the problem. I mean, I was reading what Black Lives Matter said that they wanted. All the things that they want, you know, this is why studying Africa, if you want to refute the arguments of your liberals and Jews in America, all you have to do is study African history. Every single demand and suggestion that they are making to you in America, where they are telling you this will solve the problem, that will solve the problem. Every one of those things has been tried at least once, and more likely a dozen times in Africa, and it did not work. It did not work. From my perspective, when I watch liberals making their arguments against you guys in America, every single point that they make, I can find a African counter to show you that was done and it did not work. You will find in the end, I will tell you our view of the blacks here in Africa when we were observing them. My takeaway of these blacks was that the way that we treated them, we did not pay them much, but we also did not give them much to do, and we could not find much that they were competent at. They are a people who are of limited ability. They can't do much. They are definitely not your equal. They are not your equal. And if you put them in the same position, they will not perform the same way as you. And my view was simply that how we treated them was as reasonable as you could be. And if they demand more, they demand equality, they demand all kinds of other things, they are moving into terrain that is unreasonable. And at a point, you Americans, I know you Americans like to be seen as being moral, as being right. You will find that eventually you will be pushed into a corner where no amount of discussion and reasonableness will assist you anymore. You will be forced to use force. You will be forced by yourself to make your own decision as to what is reasonable and right, and you will have to enforce that through your police, through your structures. You will, in the end, have no choice but to stand firm at some point. No. Otherwise, you'll find you'll be beaten up on for the next 1,000 years.
So what would you suggest happen right now in the United States for the blacks? What do you recommend for the blacks here?
You know, those blacks are in quite a spot there. You know, I quite laugh at the notion of some of those blacks want to return to Africa. Any blacks in America who want to return to Africa, pay their tickets and let them get the hell out of there at the soonest. That will definitely be good for you. Among the stupid arguments that they make that whites could seize on and give in on, knowing full well it's going to work for you, is any time blacks in America say that they want their own piece of territory, they want to rule themselves, you should say to them, absolutely, here's a chunk of territory, you go in there, it's your place, you go live there, we're going to seal it off and you can live by yourselves. Yeah. And I assure you, they'll have mayhem, it'll never come right. Look, for example, at how you guys have dealt with Haiti. How many times the American government and army has gone to that country, fixed it, got it running, pulled out, and it became a shambles again. Yeah. You know, ultimately, Jim, even if you believe that all people are equal, look around you, my friend, you will see that the white people of European descent are the only people who managed to get a country to a certain level of law and order and functionality. It is a trait of our people. It's our European, it's let's call it the European way of living, is called civilization. That's our way of living. And I'm happy. And you know what? Apartheid, apartheid was actually a very reasonable system. Apartheid is not at all oppressive. They completely misrepresent it. Under apartheid, apartheid's a whole discussion by itself. I can show you some stuff and you'll see. Under apartheid, black tribes were allowed to have their own tribal areas. I can even show you photographs of places I've been where blacks and only blacks are allowed to live, where they can live the way they want to live, where they don't even have to pay for land. They can go and build a house anywhere they want and do anything they want. They've got as much land as they want. If they feel like farming, they don't need to buy a farm. They can just go and there's huge amounts of areas that they're allowed to farm and nobody can stop them. And apartheid gave blacks the opportunity to rule themselves. In fact, long before apartheid even took place, whites on a number of occasions, going as far back as Cecil John Rhodes, whites experimented with black self-rule in Southern Africa in all types and forms that you can imagine. We whites gave blacks the chance to rule themselves, take responsibility on many, many occasions. And by the time you had these communist blacks coming and attacking us, we already knew from personal experience and experiments that these blacks are not going to be able to run these countries. Not because we were prejudiced and stupid and denying the black man everything, but because from practice and example, we watched them, we knew what they could do. I grew up on a farm. We had blacks working for us. We would say to them, okay, this is how you do this job. Go and do that job. And then later my dad would say, you know, look at that guy. I taught him how to do this. Look, he's not doing it. He's not listening to me. He's not following orders. I told him, do this thing every day. Now suddenly he's stopped. You know, it's not like we don't know how we work with them. We in Africa were in contact with black people all the time, every day of our lives. It's not like we don't know what they are capable of. We are simply telling you what they really are like. And anyone who says that they want to rule themselves, give them a piece of territory immediately and get them off your back. I personally think that the black Americans, and you know, black Americans, if you could get them to Africa, get them to Africa, get them off your back. These people will be a nuisance for you. There will be those who support you. But one thing I will also, I also want to tell you something. You as Americans, you have your concept in your head of what America is. And that vision of America is a vision that is shared by white people in America. The Jewish view of what America is a whole different viewpoint. And I will tell you that the black viewpoint of America is also not the America that you imagine in your head. And I've seen some instances where I've listened to black Americans talking on video and so forth, and they talk about, and all these people are busy telling you what is wrong with your country. But there is actually nothing wrong with your country. You can only do things up to a certain point. You people are very reasonable. You've done what you can do. I personally think that you people are moving deeply into what I would call the zone of madness. You are moving completely out of reality into a totally mythical world of unreality. And all the demands against you and all the complaints against you are completely unreasonable. Everything that they're asking you to do, take for example, Black Lives Matter saying, oh, get rid of the American police. Show me any civilized nation in the world that could get rid of the police services and still be a civilized nation. Even Britain, even Germany, none of those places. You always will need some kind of mechanism for law and order. You cannot now take away the American policeman and expect things to get better. And these people, what they want and what they're demanding, and these blacks, you see, these blacks are being used as rebellious workers. Now, we in Southern Africa, because the white population was so small, we had a small group of whites and we had a large black workforce. And so, of course, the Russians and the Chinese and the Jews, they see this large workforce and they say, aha, if we can take this large black workforce and turn them against a small group of whites, we'll have control of that country. And, of course, that's basically what happened. And then they can run around and they can use majority rule. And also, another thing, when you compare America and Africa, you'll find that all the arguments that liberals use in your country are the opposite of the arguments used by liberals and Jews in Africa. So in Africa, you will find that the Jews and the liberals are constantly harping on majority rule. But in your country, they harp endlessly on minorities. Mm-hmm. And they don't support majority rule. Why? Because it would be white people. and if you look, you'll find that their arguments are hypocritical. And all you have to do is look at Africa and you'll find the exact opposite example, and you'll be able to show them through proofs. You'll say, look, they tried this in Africa and it didn't work, but now you want to try it in America. You know, but it's already been tried elsewhere and it didn't work. Why must it work in America? I think you people have done as much as you can do, but I think ultimately at some point you will find that the white man has to be the adult in the room, and the white man will have to unilaterally reach a decision and say, these are the rules, this is America, and if you don't like America, you know, we'll assist you to leave. But I don't think that's why Jews are pouring all these non-whites in, because they want to take your country away from you.
So. Right. No, I understand all that. I mean, I've been monitoring that, watching that, and now this thing that do you think that the George Floyd thing was set up to create this situation?
Let me tell you how I think it works. There's a lot of military intelligence stuff that you guys don't get to see, because military and intelligence people tend to work in secrecy. In Southern Africa, our military and intelligence people wrote lots of books and told deeper stories of what they knew from their spying and so forth. I will tell you that the way that I think this George Floyd thing came about is that I think you've got a bunch of malicious Jews and communists sitting there, And they are looking at various things that are happening in the country, and that they probably are sitting, and every day they are looking at news stories that are coming through, and they're saying to themselves, oh, look at this news story. Do you think we could use this news story, use this and exploit it politically, through violence? And then somebody would say, no, this story is not good enough. Check out this story. And I don't think it's set up. I think that there are lots of stories that come along, and they just pick the one that they think, you know what? If we stir up trouble around this one, this one's got more potential for us. Let's go with this one. And then they pick, okay, George Floyd, right? George Floyd, look at him. He was standing, kneeling on the guy's neck. We can say, look at that police cruelty, brutality. And they just look at the propaganda that they can pull out of that story. And then they just blast it out through the newspapers, and they start initiating, giving money and political guidance to the groups that are now going to work with them. The newspapers, the mass media, is an organ for the spreading of terrorism. Mm-hmm. It creates the fear. Look at what it's done with things like COVID and everything. Yeah. You've seen yourself time and again how the mass media can take the entire nation and focus it on one black man. Look at Trayvon Martin. Yeah. One black man, and then they can stir up all the hatred. The media, I would like to see the media controlled or smashed or replaced by something. I truly believe that the mass media is out of control. And it is media like guys like you. It is these things that need much more publicity. And, of course, that is why Jews are shutting everybody down and harassing everybody, because the truth will kill them. It'll destroy their pack of lies, their house of cards. Mm-hmm.
Did you in Africa have anybody, people, had people there protesting for the Floyd guy? Because all over the world, people were protesting what happened here. Did you have anybody in Africa that was doing that, like supporting George Floyd?
I don't always watch our news that closely. I'm only interested in certain things, but offhand, I didn't see anything about George Floyd in Africa. What I was totally surprised and amazed by was that there was George Floyd stuff in Britain and in Europe. And that says to me that there's a different mechanism at work. Probably in Africa, in my limited contact with the blacks, I haven't seen anybody even express outrage or even care. That is another example of they are creating a problem and scaring all of you whites on the basis of, oh, this is race and you're angering the black people. Meanwhile, the black people of Africa don't give a half a shit about most of these things anyway. Mm-hmm. And it's like COVID. Nobody in Africa even cared about COVID. The government of South Africa has used it as a great chance to enforce all kinds of laws on us. That's a whole other thing. But other than that, nobody cared. Nobody even cared even about COVID, actually, initially.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and I wanted to just keep this about 2 hours. We've been going about 2 hours.
Yes.
I think we covered quite a bit here. This is good.
I mean, we covered a lot of strange things, and I hope it gives you a bit of insight. And if you want to talk about different things or zoom in on different things, you're most welcome to ask. But everything that you've heard about Africa, you've heard the political version of it. Just like you see, all your stories don't add up. When you go and start looking closer, you say to yourself, I think I can say this to you, is that in the modern time, let's say since World War II, I would say that the notion of mass uprisings of non-whites is itself fake. There are many uprisings. I would say 90 to 95% of mass uprisings of blacks, even in Africa, were fake. There was a political agenda. Somebody came and said, we need to arm these blacks. We need to politicize them. If those blacks were not armed and given money and helped and trained and taught, they would never have engaged in any of these things. They'd still be living in huts. They'd still be working on our farms and mines. And all that they've seen is they've seen that black people can be manipulated and angered, and they are Jews are such cowards. Jews aren't going to go and protest in the streets. They're not going to throw bricks and set cars on fire. So, but they can get the blacks to do it, you know. Mm-hmm. And the liberals are the same. What shocks me is that there are university students and the children of the rich who are hardcore left-wing, white-hating, America-hating fanatics. That is shocking. And in Southern Africa, we whites actually passed laws. We passed laws openly called the suppression of communism. And in all our countries, we made communism and the practice of communism illegal. And I think in your country has erred on the side of let's go the opposite direction. Let's give people a chance, let them talk. And all it's done is it's now allowed them to become more sophisticated. Now you've got university professors pushing communism. Mm. And so now, finally it's backfiring on you.
Right. Okay, Jan, we're going to leave it here, but we'll pick up on this another time. I'm definitely going to be talking to you more about, you know, different things because you have a good insight. And what I like, the reason why I wanted to talk to you is because of the fact that I wanted to show people what happened in Africa is going to happen here. That's what I wanted to show. And you proved it. I mean,
thank
you. You couldn't get any better than that. Somebody from Africa. Find out what's going on, right?
Thank you so much, Jim. I really appreciated it when you invited me. It's an honor to be on your show. Thank you very much.
But we'll talk again, okay? So I'll be in touch with you. So make sure you send me that book you got there, that the thing.
Government by Deception.
Yeah, that PDF. I'd like to see it.
I'll make a note of it. I think you'll find it interesting.
Okay. Well, you have a good night there, Jan. I know it's late where you are, so you take care.
Thank you very much again. Take care. Yeah.
Bye now.
Bye.
These are my websites, historyreview.com, africancrisis.info, and white-shop.biz. This is my attempt to try and do some Jew-free trading and experimenting with the next level of stuff. So, thank you very much for listening. We'll be chatting again soon. Take care of yourselves.